So I welcome all of you for Wednesday Sutta teaching session. Actually, it is Tuesday for some of you. And we were discussing several suttas, which is more relevant to our practice. And we are trying to get certain insights from these suttas, as then it is really convincing ourselves to continue our practice. So far, we have discussed Sabbasava Sutta, and last time we have finished Dhatu Vibhanga Sutta. Both are really relevant to our practice. And now today I thought of starting another series, another sutta, and that is the first sutta in the Majjhima Nikaya. It is called Mula Pariyaya Sutta. So sometimes this is not much discussed because it is little complicated, but once we analyze it properly, there are a lot of insights that we can gain from this sutta. And again, it is quite important sutta, that's why it is put it as the first sutta in the Majjhima Nikaya, the middle length discourses. So Mula Pariyaya Sutta, dealing with Buddha giving kind of a view of various people, and he is very much like the person who is having the omniscient knowledge, so that he has the capacity to look at how others are thinking about various things, how others are others' views about certain things. So as the world-renowned teacher, now he is giving that various views, explaining us how these different category of people are looking at various things in many different ways. So if one can understand these different ways, then in a way we can understand why people are having many different views, and why they are quarreling, why they are sort of ignorant or deluded. So once we understand these facts, so it is easy for us to understand this people's different views. And on the other hand, we also can have a different perspective about the whole thing, whole experience, rather than simply thinking our view is the best thing, our view is the true view. So rather than that, we can understand some sort of sympathetically or emphatically how people are having many different views. So here, this sutta, Buddha himself leading without any particular reason, in the sense that there are no any sort of discussion, no, there is no any monk asking any question, but rather Buddha himself understanding the value of this sutta, understanding the teaching of these facts to the monks and whoever his followers, he is taking the lead, he is taking the upper hand, and he is taking the opportunity to explain this various information. He was actually residing at Ukkatta. That is another area where he has sometimes associated. And one grove, one garden called Subhaga. So at that time, Buddha sort of addressed the monks. And he is asking, Sabbadhamma Mula Pariyayang Vo Bhikkave Desissami. So monks, I am going to teach you the root of all things. Tang sunatha sadukang manasikarota. Just listen to it and contemplate it. Reflect on it. And actually this sutta, having dealt with some views about the world, and not only the this human world, but also various other worlds. So it's giving a kind of a perspective of whole universe. Now, as you know, Buddha's teaching also has the idea of a universe, and there are many levels of existence. And Buddha is giving kind of a cross-section of all these many different existences and explained the sutta. So, therefore, in all these many existences, there are many levels of people, many levels of beings existing there. So therefore, Buddha is taking a cross-section of all these levels of existences and giving a kind of a beautiful explanation how these people would understand their own experience. And so there, Buddha has taken 24 concepts, and these 24 concepts actually cover, as I said, the whole cross-section of the whole existence. Say for example, when we consider the first four, earth, water, fire, air. So now you are little familiar with these because we dealt with them during the Dhatu Vibhanga Sutta. So they are the four primary elements: earth element, water element, fire element and air element. So now Buddha, by taking these four elements, he basically covers the whole physical component. Now we have various physical components, physical world throughout our world, throughout the world, and they are, by taking all these four elements, indicates that applying this kind of a methodology, applying this kind of a view, we can cover the whole physical experience, all the physical components, all physical things we can cover. Say for example, if we consider the earth element, say there are many components, say a car, a bus, a land, a chair, a table, and if we come to ourselves, maybe the teeth, hair, skeleton. So likewise, there are many things, we'll use the term things, there are many things which has the earth element as predominant. So by taking earth element here, which covers all such things. On the other hand, we have many watery things, say water, rain, say a tea, a milk, maybe say orange juice, whatever it is, a reservoir, river, a sea. So likewise, there are many watery things available around the world, so we can include all those into this water element. And then fire element, we have various fires, bushfire, and many different fires available, and again the heat available, and again cold available. So by considering all these, we can actually reduces it to a fire element by giving here as the tejo dhatu or tejo. And then the air element, so we have wind, maybe the various say even tornadoes and all these things what you have, and cyclones, and maybe if it comes to the individual level, so we have inhale, exhale, we have the upper going air, lower going air, and again the movements of the whole body, and not only the whole body, and even whatever the movements available throughout the world, available wherever in the world, which indicates the presence of air element. So by giving these four elements, Buddha is giving a cross-section of the whole physical world. And then one common term is there as beings. So we can consider those as the beings which may be human beings, maybe the lower realms, the what we call as peta, say nirisan, so that is the animal realms, and various other niraya, likewise those are hell realms. So all these can be included as here the beings by giving a generic term as beings, the bhuta, whoever arisen in the world. So this can include all the human beings as well. And then gods. So gods, here we can say, according to the Buddha's teaching, there are six celestial realms. So we can include all those six celestial realms as gods. So I'll show you a separate diagram indicating this kind of a view, what is Buddha, according to the Buddha's teaching, what is this universal picture or the cosmos according to the teaching. And then Pajapati is another term actually used by the Hindus. They are the creator god is called Pajapati. So it could be to represent their beliefs, Buddha might have included here, included this Pajapati here. So the idea is that there is a kind of a creator being, creator god according to the Hinduism, and so that is also included here. And maybe to cover various beliefs, to include and to give the proper idea or proper perspective about their beliefs, so Buddha have included this. And then the Brahma. So there are many levels of Brahmas, and so I'll get into the this. There's a kind of a universe picture I have extracted. So I'll just go through that for a while. So there are four levels or four realms, what we call a hell realms, the lower realms. We are the people who did what we call, say, the unwholesome deeds, get reborn, and they are suffering there. So that is the picture that we can take. And the Naraka, Tirthisan, Peta, Asura. So Naraka is one level of hell realm, and then the Nirisan is where Tirthisan is where the what we can see as the animals, many different levels of many different varieties of animals. And then Peta, the hungry gods, and Asura is another level who typically explain as huge body and having many eons of lifespan. And then on top of that we have the Manussa Loka, that is the human realm. And then we have these six heavenly realms or celestial beings, starting with Chatum Maharajika, Thavatinsa, Yama, Tusita, Nimmanarati, Paranimita, Vasavati. So these are the six celestial realms typically explained in Dhamma, and those all can be included when we are putting the term as Deva. And as I said, when we consider the Brahma realm, so that is fairly advanced in a way. It has many other levels. So you know, in order to become a Brahma, you have to develop Jhana, and that is the concentration practice. If one is able to develop first Jhana to the maximum level, or to the minimum middle level, or to the lower level, so depending on that level of practice, the level of expertise, so one will be reborn in different Brahma realms. The Mahabrahma, Brahma Purohita, Brahma Parisajja. Brahma Parisajja is the lowest one, and then the Brahma Purohita, middle, and the Mahabrahma is the highest. If one develops first Jhana to the very best level, and then one can become a Mahabrahma. So by including here as Brahma, the term Brahma as number 8, so which covers all these three first Jhana related Brahma realms. And then Abhasara, Appamanabha, Parittabha. So this is where the kind of radiance is involved, kind of as their self-illumination. So that radiance, depending on the level of the second Jhana, so they will be reborn in any of these Brahma realms. Now, if say for example, if one develops second Jhana to some level, so one can reborn in the Parittabha, which indicates that small amount of what you call the illumination radiance. And if it develops to the middle level, one can become Appamanabha, and if one develops to the highest level, one can become Abhasara. So by indicating here in the nine gods of streaming radiance, Abhasara, so this covers the whole second Jhana related three Brahma realms. And then third Jhana has another three Brahma realms. So if one develops to the highest, one can become Subhakinha, and if one develops to the middle, one can become Appamana Subha, and if one develops it to some extent, one can become Paritta Subha. But by telling this, don't think that you are developing, you are in the third Jhana for 1 hour, and that will lead you to born as a Brahma in the Paritta Subha. It is not. So don't very much underestimate the situation. Rather, it's a lifetime practice. So one has to master jhana. So depending on the mastery, one will be reborn in any of these three. Say, for example, one can immediately get into third jhana at any time, and he can stay there as long as he wish, and he can emerge from it as long as when he determines, and he can reflect back what is the experience very easily. So likewise, there are many jhana mastery. So if one is able to master third jhana, and depending on that mastery, one will be reborn in the relevant or its corresponding Brahma realm. So this is the idea. And then, so that is the gods of refulgent glory, Subhakinha. So that by including this Subhakinha, this basically covers the whole spectrum of third jhana related Brahma realms. Now we are getting to the fourth jhana. So fourth jhana has one vehappala and then asanya satta. So vehappala is another Brahma realm, and asanya satta is probably you might have heard about non-percipient beings who basically doesn't have an active mind, but it's a kind of a temporary mind operation is ceased, and then one simply has a kind of a physical component, physical existence, and after the sort of exhaust of the mental power, one will be again reborn at another place. So basically, these are different absorptions. Depending on the absorptions, so one can be reborn in any of these. And then Aviha, Atappa, Sudassa, Sudassi, Akanita. So these are what we call as pure abodes, Suddhavasa, where only the Anagamis and Arahants can be reborn. Sorry, not the Arahants, Anagamis are available. And once they are reborn there, probably they actually can attain Arahant. So there is no return back to the human realm or to any other sensual world. So this is, apart from the other realms, and these five actually are only accessible or available for nobles, not for the others. So therefore they are called Suddhavas or pure abodes. So Vehappala and Overlord. So these are Vehappala is related to the fourth jhana, and Aviha, by including Aviha, it could be including all the five pure abodes. But I have a doubt here. The book tells it as Abhibhu, which is also another sort of indication for Brahma realm, but the commentary says it is representing the Asanya Satta, but I have a fair doubt it could be Aviha, not Abhibhu, but it is just for the kind of my own idea. I'm not 100% sure about that. So basically that covers the 16 Brahma realms. So here 9, here 2, 11, and this 5, altogether 16 Brahma realms are there. So all these 16 Brahma realms have the physical body. Some kind of physical existence is available, visible. So even though the human eye can't see, still the physical component is available. Even human eye can't see the Deva realms. And even certain, Petas, hungry gods, we can't see, because our range of vision is very limited. So as a result, we can only perceive, we can only recognize only a very narrow range of what you call the wavelength. But still some refined existence, refined physical existence is there, physical what you call appearance is there, physical component is there in all these realms. But when it comes to the Arupa Loka, Arupa Brahma realms, there is no such physical component as well. There is no body on the other hand. The body, the physical component is no more. Only the mental component is available. So akasananchayatana, vinyananchayatana, akinchanyayatana, nevasanyana asanyayatana. So those are the four arupa loka, immaterial Brahma realms, typically corresponding to various arupa jhana. You know there are four arupa jhana, akasananchayatana, the sort of boundless space. And then vinyananchayatana, boundless consciousness. And akinchanyayatana, nothingness. And nevasanya nasanyayatana. So that is the no perception, neither perception nor non-perception. So by all these four are included here, where akasananchayatana, vinyananchayatana, akinchanyayatana, nevasanya nasanyayatana. So those four arupa realms are included in these 24 concepts. And then, now Buddha is taking another four cross-section. What is seen, what is heard, what is sensed, and what is cognized. Another way of categorizing the whole experience. Ditta, sutta, mutta, vinyata. So, ditta is whatever we see. So, this actually not only relevant to the human, but as a Brahma, whatever he see. As a Peta, whatever he see. As a God, whatever he see. So likewise, the whole seeing, the visual, vision is included here. And whatever heard. Now, say gods can hear some far, very far. So that is included here. As human beings, we can hear certain sounds. That is included here. Certain animals can hear another frequency. That is included here. So by including what is heard, represents the whole sounds. Sensed. So this actually has the tongue, nose and the body. So all those three faculties and the corresponding experience, corresponding smell, taste and touch included here. And the cognize, vinyatam. So whatever we cognize through our mind can be included here. Now you can see slowly Buddha is sort of covering, by giving all these 24 components, Buddha is covering the whole spectrum. So that's why I want to go through slowly here. So this is a kind of a one-time explanation I am giving to introduce you to this sutta. So Buddha is taking these 24 concepts in order to cover the whole spectrum of our experience. Not only human experience, but the whole universal experience is included here. And then there is unity. So this is unity and the diversity and all. So these are in a way, we can say as fairly spiritual. Say when one's mind is developed, whether one can make it united with some another superpower, with another entity, with another, sometimes in the Hinduism, in Brahmanism, it's called soul. So one becomes united with the soul. So this is another idea. So they believe that there is something called ekattam, something called unity. And they become that. I become that. I become this. I am that. So likewise, we discuss some amount of this in the Dhatu Vibhanga Sutta at the last section. So all these are conceiving. Anyway, that is also included here. And then one becomes nanattam. So one becomes many. That is also included here. And then sabbang. So the sabbang basically means everything. So one becomes everything. And then interestingly, Buddha has included Nibbana as well. So this is something interesting. So probably as Buddhist, we might think Nibbana cannot be included here. And we can argue in that. And we think why Buddha has included Nibbana into this category. And they are called all 24 concepts. So is the Nibbana is a concept. So various doubts can arise in our mind. So that is why this sutta is very interesting and very challenging. And in a way very radical. So Buddha included, without any hesitation, Buddha included Nibbana also here. By giving the proper idea. So in order to give the many different views, now Buddha is coming up with four different people. The first person is untaught ordinary person. So that is the typical worldling who basically has no idea about the Buddha, no idea about the Dhamma, no idea about the Sangha, and who has never heard about Buddha's teaching, is never into the practice. So sometimes he called as Asutova Putujjano, who is unheard of Buddha's teaching, and Akovido, who is not skillful in Buddha's teaching, in his practice. Aryadhamme Avinito, who is not disciplining or he is not restraining himself according to the teaching. And then Sappurisanang Adassavi, who doesn't go to meet a noble person, who doesn't associate a Kalyana Mitta. So he is simply a, what we can call a blind person, even though his eyes are available, but he is very much blind to the spirituality, he is blind to the Buddha's teaching. So that is one. So Buddha is explaining how that person, that worldly person, this untaught ordinary person, how is his vision, how is his view in all these 24 concepts. Now, what is his vision about earth? What is his view about water? What is his view about fire? What is his view about air? What is his view about all the other beings? About gods, about Pajapati, and about various Brahmas, and about various Arupa realms, and what he perceives when he hears something, when he sees something, when he senses something, and what is his view about the unity, and what is his view about the Nibbana. Now this is how this sutta beautifully elaborates. So Buddha basically actually I have extracted all 24 concepts here for the clarification, and Buddha in the discourse taking one by one and explaining how untaught ordinary person perceives them. And then perceives all these 24 concepts. And then the seka. Seka is that one who is in training. Now he has practiced, he actually has met the Buddha, rather the Buddha's teaching, or a disciple, or Kalyana Mitta, and he started to practice, and he is honestly practicing, and as a result, he has become a stream winner, or he has become a once returner, or he has become a non-returner. So all these are included as the seka, a trainee. And what is his view? How he is looking at about these 24 concepts? What is his view? How he perceives these 24 concepts? So that is also included. And then what is the Arahant's view? Arahant is the fully enlightened person, fully enlightened one. And what is his view about these 24 concepts? How he perceives? And then ultimately, the fourth category, that is the Tathagata, that is the Samma Sambuddha, how he perceives. So you can understand this is a kind of a beautiful sutta in a way. The whole world view, whole universal view with respect to four different categories of people are explained in this sutta. And another point is Arahant's view and the Tathagata's view are basically the same. There is no big difference when one become fully enlightened. So, and when one become a Samma Sambuddha, the whole defilements are uprooted, and as a result their views are basically similar. So even though there are four persons here, in terms of the views, we can say the third person and the fourth person, that is the Arahant and the Tathagata, basically have the same view. So therefore, when we are explaining the sutta, we can further reduces the persons into three. They are the Arahant and the Tathagata basically have the same view. Therefore, there are three main views we can extract from this sutta. Now let's get into the view of untaught ordinary person. So we'll start from here. Now suppose a typical person seeing a chair. Now I am taking the Patavi as an example. For Patavi, I am simply taking a chair. A typical person is seeing a chair. Now he perceives earth as earth. Patavin patavito sanjanati. Now he takes this is a chair. Simple as that. So he actually, I mean, some in a way we can say it is correct because he didn't misunderstood it as a table or it as a bicycle, but it is a chair. So very interesting. So Buddha is taking, okay, patavin patavito sanjanati. So he has the view that I am seeing a chair. So typical subject-object relationship is there. Now we have the whole languages. So there are a third person, second person, first person. So likewise, many languages are developed based on these experiences. So I see a chair. So when I am telling as a first person, so I can say I am seeing a, I see a chair. Another person telling, I see a chair. So I can say that with respect to another person, he saw a chair, he sees a chair. So likewise, and another, when it comes to the third person or second person, we can say you saw a chair. Did you see a chair? So likewise, we can communicate this whole experience. So a chair is something available. And chair is something permanent, and maybe the chair is very beautiful. Chair is maybe a very luxurious chair. Here, actually, I have indicated a very simple chair, but it can be a very luxurious chair. And suppose you are a practitioner, and this chair could be very useful to you as a practitioner to sit comfortably with a straight back. So you probably like it. So likewise, when the word typically ordinary person see a chair, so many different views can arise in his mind. So he may understand this is a chair, that is good. But on the other hand, depending on his mentality, depending on his mindset, depending on his likes and dislikes, many other levels of understanding or many other levels of views can arise in his mind. Say, for example, as I said, suppose I am taking the same chair here. Suppose you are now searching for a chair and you are a practitioner and you heard that you have to get a straight chair, kind of a simple chair, not a very luxurious chair, because if you sit on a luxurious chair you might fall asleep. So you have to have a straight chair, not much comfortable and not uncomfortable, and you found this chair very good. So you now have that all ideas about what you are searching for, what you are looking for, and immediately you, once you found this chair, now with that all perceptions, with that all preconceived ideas, now you are looking at this chair. So there are many subjective experience involved here. Now, due to that, so you are relating to this chair in many different ways. So that's how the spectrum of grammar and spectrum of many relationships with respect to this chair can be mentioned. Say, for example, say you are telling he conceives himself in earth and he conceives himself apart from earth. He conceives earth to be mine. So basically, many relationships can arise based on that kind of explanation where the person, the subject, has its own ideas, preconceived ideas, likes and dislikes, and on the other hand, object is something else. And with respect to these perceived ideas, preconceived ideas, now he is recognizing this chair as a chair, but kind of a colored view. It's not a completely purified view, but with a kind of a colored view. Now he is recognizing chair as a chair. And he basically has kind of a view that it's a good chair. It's a beautiful chair. It's a comfortable chair. It's an expensive chair. So likewise, he has many other additions, other constructs to his own experience. And as a result, we can say his whole experience is colored, or what you call as his whole experience is perverted, not the real experience that he is taking, but rather his whole experience is perverted because of his own existing internal likes and dislikes, preconceived ideas. So basically in Dhamma there are four perversions explained. Sanya Vipallasa explained, that is where the understanding something impermanent as permanent. So it's in a way a misunderstanding, not really an understanding, kind of misunderstanding something impermanent as permanent. Now when you see this jar, it's a kind of, you can say, I can take it home, I can keep it to my children, I can offer it to someone, I can offer it to a monastery, whatever it is. You can say, considering it's a permanent jar, it may last for many years. You can use it for many years. So likewise, you have the permanency view in your mind. But if you consider it to the higher level, it is not permanent, it is very transient, and it consists of say molecules, atoms, etc., if you like in that way. But on the other hand, we conventionally, conceptually, we take it as a permanent chair. And on the other hand, we consider it is comfortable. We can use it for comfortable sitting. We can use it for our furniture to have some nice experience. So we are expecting some happiness through it. And so we have the sukha sanya. So we don't go to the bottom, we don't go to the yoniso manasikara to wisely reflect about this component. So rather we simply get the information, or we simply surface touch, and therefore we have the view of happiness, sukha sanya. The perception of happiness is there. And on the other hand, you can relate with this chair. You consider it is my chair, or it is his chair. So likewise, you can relate with this in a personally. So you can incorporate kind of a personality here. And on the other hand, if it is a person, so there you can consider there is someone there. Suppose you are seeing a person. Basically, we can say it's a patavi. If we consider now, say, you are seeing a man, a woman. So basically, it's a kind of a compact view is there, kind of a one person is there. So we can include, we can say, that's a person, a soul there. So that is where the sanya vipallasa again in operation, where self view or the perception of a self is incorporated. And on the other hand, when something is ugly, or when something is loathsome, we are not seeing that reality, but rather we consider it as a beautiful, attractive. And as a result, he delights in earth. So when you think it is permanent, very beautiful, and you can possess it, and you can have it for a long time, you can be happy with it, and you like to have it. This is my chair. So I possess it. I brought it. I bought it at this place. I bought it at, say, Walmart. I bought it at Apico, wherever it is. So likewise, you simply say you are possessing it. It is my chair. So likewise, many different views are risen in one's mind with respect to this chair. Now, basically, Buddha asks as a last question, why is this? Why these many different views? Why this person is perceiving this whole experience as a subject-object relationship, and why many different relationships are arising in his mind, and why he is going to many ideas, preconceived ideas, or many different proliferations, ruminations about this chair, about this earth, patavidhatu. Why? Because Buddha says he didn't understand it fully. He did not understand it fully. Aparinyatan tassati vadami. He didn't realize the chair in the proper way. So that is why he has many different views about this chair. So this is the typical explanation about the Patavi Dhatu, and actually it can be related to water, fire, air as well. Now I can actually include water. Suppose you are seeing apple juice, you are looking at a tea, you are looking at a coffee. So you may have your own many different ideas. You can understand, okay, by its smell, you can recognize, oh, this is a coffee. And suppose you are really fond of having a coffee, and you are nowadays, suppose we are reaching the winter, so maybe you like to have a coffee, and you are searching of that. So at that time, if you see a coffee, so you really like it, you really want to have it, you want to buy it. And as a result, you have many preconceived ideas, your mind is already conditioned, and with that conditioned mind, you perceive a coffee. Suppose you are in a lost, you have lost in a desert, and now you see a little amount of water, or you come across an oasis. At that time, you are elated, and because you are in search of water, and you are really thirsty, and now you come across an oasis. So you have many different views about this oasis. You can even sing a song according about this water, about this oasis. You can write a poem about this oasis, because a lot of preconceived ideas are there, lot of ambition is there, finding of water, and that is one scenario. And on the other hand, suppose you are simply going towards a river, or you are every day you are seeing a river or a reservoir, and it has become a natural sight for you. So there is no such kind of admiration, but rather you simply see a river. So likewise, depending on our situation, our context, so we have many different ideas about water. Suppose you are living in an area, there are no much rain, and if rain come today, then you are really happy, because your whole environment become cool, and the whole environment become live again. So you really like the rain. On the other hand, suppose you are experiencing rain for many days. Now you can't dry your clothes, you can't go out, you need umbrella, you are now suffering because of the heavy rain. And then it becomes a kind of a threat, and flooding happens, and many diseases are spreading, and now the rain become a kind of a threat, a nonsense. So at that time you have a different idea about the rain. So likewise, depending on the situation, our perception about rain is going to change. And on the other hand, if it comes to a fire, now you are in a winter, and you may like to have a fairly warm environment at your home. So at that time, kind of a stove, kind of a fire, may be kind of a good experience, giving you the enough warmth. But on the other hand, if your house is on fire, then you really hate the fire, and you are in big trouble, because now you have to call the fire brigade, and many different situations are there. Likewise, if it is too cold, again you don't like it. If it is somewhat comfortable, then you say it's proper, it is air conditioned. So likewise, related to the fire element, you have many different views. The typical ordinary person can have the many different views. And if it is comfortable, if it is beautiful, if it is in appreciative level, so you like to have it, you like to own it. And on the other hand, air also, say if you can't breathe, now immediately suppose someone is giving you oxygen, so it's a life-saving situation, and you really want air. But on the other hand, suppose you are in a beach and you get enough air, so it is not a big deal. So likewise, depending on the situation about air, we have many different views, and all the movements are happening because of air. And we may like to move here and there, we like to run, we like to jump, we like to walk. All these movements actually are happening with respect to the air element, because of the operation of air element. So we can relate with air element. So likewise, we can get on to one by one all these 24 concepts, and we'll take one by one slowly. Actually, I basically covered four elements because they are much relevant, fairly operate in very same manner. So with that, I like to conclude today's sutta teaching and allow you to ask questions, and I open the session for questions.
Thank you, Bhante. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. If there are any new friends to this group, you may ask a question by raising your hand and asking directly, or you can also send it via the chat function. So Bhante, one question that I received. Dear Bhante, is there benefit in understanding the reality of things in terms of concepts? For example, a person may not have seen or experienced the true nature of things, but can remind him or herself that this chair is not mine, it's composed of elements and has functional uses. Is this kind of thinking still helpful for the realization of the path?
Yeah, to some extent. Actually, suppose you understand, you know to some level that this chair is an accumulation of various components, say wood pieces, wooden pieces, and it is sort of assembled in a particular manner, and then put a cushion and you apply some paint and etc. So if you have that real view, then the attachment become less. Say for example, if you consider a vehicle, your car, suppose you really attach to your car, and if you know that this car consists of many components, it has wheels, it has tires, it has a steering wheel and the seats, etc., etc., and so if you have that proper view, then the attachment become really less. If you go and met with an accident, if your car really damaged, the sorrow arising in your mind become less, because you know it's an impermanent thing, and on the other hand, it consists of many different components, and you can replace the component if it is say burnout or some damage has happened, you can replace the component. So likewise, so if we have that level of understanding, it's also useful, but that is not enough. So that's where we have to go to the fairly deep level to understand the impermanence, to understand the unsatisfactoriness, and understand the sort of non-governability. So then probably even this collapse, then that is no, I mean, you can bear it. You have the maturity to bear it. So that's why, I mean, many different levels are there, even in Vipassana. That's why, say, for example, when you apply to your body. Now, if you consider the body as something earth, primarily it is the earth element. And there you can say this body is beautiful, this body is ugly, this body is healthy, this is weak, this is strong. So likewise, you have many different perceptions related to the body. But when you see that it consists of many bodily parts, hair, head hair, body hair, teeth, flesh, say skeleton, intestines, saliva, blood, urine, likewise you understand the many different components, bodily parts, then the attachment becomes less. So you, to some extent, you have wisdom. So therefore, even the certain kamatthana, certain meditation objects are there to see the 32 parts of the body, the analyzing the body as 32 parts. So this gives a primarily a good view, a proper view about the body, rather than taking it as something, as one thing. So this compact view, compactness, is something really promotes the self view. Compactness is something really promotes the attachment. Compactness is something really promotes the view of impermanence and some satisfactoriness, happiness. But on the other hand, if you are able to penetrate this compactness, and if you are able to understand it is not something, a single thing, but it's a combination, it's an accumulation of many different components, and each and every component is subject to many of its own terms and conditions, so it's always vulnerable, always there's a possibility of a collapse, possibility of accident, or a possibility of a kind of a disease. So likewise, when you properly contemplate, the attachment reduce, the grasping reduce, and the wisdom arise. Back to you, Jennifer.
Yes, thank you, Bhante. So the next question is a meditative reflection on impermanence and suffering through mindfulness with clear comprehension will help in experiential understanding.
Sure, of course. So that's the idea. So we'll get into that explanation of that properly in when we are dealing with the trainee, when we are dealing with the seeker, who is the real practitioner. So who really now trying to understand the this whole experience in a different way, in a special way. That's why the vipassana. Vipassana, the term vipassana basically means having a different view. Not the typical obsessive view, the typical mundane deluded view. The one is going to have a different view. Buddha is showing us a different path to look at the whole experience in a different way. So your whole perception, the whole perspective about the world going to change. So that's why the mindfulness, the development of mindfulness actually paves the way to that experience, that paves the way to develop that insights. Not immediately. Actually, don't think that once you are started to mindfulness practice, once you get into a walking path, you are simply experiencing your left leg, right leg, left leg, right leg. Still, you have the typical conceptual thinking. Still, you have the typical conventional thinking. That we have to start from where we are. But we don't need to stop there. The mindfulness helps us to further develop clear comprehension, sampajanya, and as a result, the seed of wisdom is now sort of planting in ourselves. The seed of wisdom is rooted in ourselves. Seed of wisdom is now growing in ourselves. So at one time, maybe it's possible to see the reality, seeing the things as they truly are. So that is how slowly we are developing wisdom, to have the proper view. So in this analysis, Buddha say, why this worldly person have all these different perplexities, have these different doubts, have this all different proliferation, have these many different ideas. So he asked the question, why? Why is this? Why is that? Because he has not fully understood it. So that's the Buddha's explanation. So he hasn't understood it properly. He couldn't penetrate it properly. He didn't really analyze it properly, or he didn't really meditatively understood it properly. So those are the explanation we can say. So the mindfulness practice helps us to have this understanding, and it prepares the platform to build the wisdom, the necessary penetrative wisdom. So that is where the mindfulness is important.
Thank you, Bhante. And can I invite Chitta Devi, to please unmute yourself and ask a question.
Bhante, can you hear me, Bhante?
Yes.
Yes. Now, my question just leads from what your explanation and the other question the participant asked, is that seeing a chair and seeing a person will, from what your explanation is, at different stages and levels of understanding and wisdom, one sees it in a different point of view, but ultimately does it stem to the fact that one is able to understand this by vipassana while meditating, that you come to that understanding and wisdom, and so that when you see this person, though you actually see a solid being, because of the attainment of certain states of wisdom and understanding through vipassana, one understands it in a different way. Is that how it works?
We can say so. So basically, when we typically think, consider it in a conventional way, the conceptual way, seeing does not stop at the level of seeing. So if you can understand, now suppose you are seeing a chair. So you recognize it as a chair. So it does not stop at that level even. I mean, even there it has gone a little far, but still that seeing does not stop at the level of seeing, but rather it's further sort of stimulates further thinking in one's own mind. I want to have it. Whose chair is this? What is the price of it? Is it a bad? I mean, it's a bad chair. I want to repair it. So likewise, many different further thinking, second thought is stimulated by this sight. But on the other hand, when it is coming to the vipassana, so one is developing the capacity to sort of control one's thinking, to properly tame one's thinking, to properly guard one's say faculties. So many different aspects are there. So guarding one's faculties in one level, and not taking sort of the nimittas, not taking signs is another way. And penetrative wisdom is another way. Say seeing things as they as they are impermanent, as they are not unsatisfactory and ungovernable. There is no core there. There is no essence there. So likewise, so there are many many levels of understanding. Many levels of wisdom is incorporated. So as a result, you have the proper way. Conventionally, you can of course look at it as a chair, but on the other hand, kind of a developed wisdom is always supporting your mind not to grasp it, not to have any defilement with respect to that chair. So that is where the practice is really helping us to avoid grasping, so that you have a very unattached mind, unconfused mind, or unentangled mind, and you can be with the whole experience in a peaceful manner.
Well, thank you, Bhante. But like now, in an advanced state, say an arahat won't see a chair as a mass of energy. He'll still see it the same way as we see it, but his understanding is in a deeper way. Is that right? Would you say that correct?
We can say so. Actually, that Buddha also, actually, once someone has asked from the Buddha, now when an arahant is referring him as I preach Dhamma. Someone preach Dhamma to me. So likewise, people are referring, and the arahants are referring themselves as I, you, me. So why is that? So that question is asked from the Buddha. And then Buddha says, he know the convention. He does not confuse the convention. He know the convention is convention. For the communication, he is effectively using the convention. But he know the limitations of the convention, and he know the benefits of the convention, and he is not confused or entangled in the convention. So he effectively, skillfully using the convention.
Thank you, Bhante.
Yeah.
Thank you, Bhante. Are there any other questions from the participants? Okay.
Actually, actually, this sutta is something little confusing. So actually, this is one of the suttas that the audience were not happy. So if you consider all the suttas in the Sutta Pitaka, at the end of the sutta, most of the monks and the other, whoever the lay people, whoever the listeners, are really happy about the sutta. But after hearing this sutta, the Mulapariyaya Sutta, it is mentioned that they are not happy. so I don't know, today you also might not be happy by hearing this sutta. But anyway, this is really a very beautiful sutta, and giving a very deep understanding about the Dhamma. So that's why I have taken it.
Thank you, Bhante. I personally am very joyful hearing about this sutta, even though I'm still at the very first level of the ordinary person. But at least now we know where we need to strive for. So thank you very much, Bhante. And that is it in terms of all of the questions received.
Yeah. Okay, then if there is no any other question, we can wind up the session. So we will slowly go a little deeper in this sutta, because it's really interesting, and again some philosophical aspects are also there in the sutta, because the whole gamut of views are covered. So that's why Buddha is taking very beautifully, like today's scientific approach, he's taking 24 components or 24 concepts. So this represents the whole cross-section of the whole universe. And then again, he is taking four people as the cross section of the whole different experiences or different people. And then he is giving an explanation how each and every person is perceiving all these many different concepts. Accordingly, we can apply this model to anything in the world, to anything in the whole universe. So that's why it is called the root of all things, the Mula Pariyaya, the root of all things. So in a way, this is a kind of very beautiful explanation of the whole experience about the whole universe by many different people. And therefore, it covers the whole world, whole universe in a way. So by understanding this, we can really understand where we are, how our mind works, and why we are giving different interpretations, why another person is giving different interpretation. So we can therefore understand their way of thinking, understand their perceptions. And we, if we are a little advanced, then we can understand why these people are giving this kind of a perception, this kind of a view. So how can I be at peace with them? And what was the reason for him to give this kind of an explanation? And again, how was I just before starting off the practice, just before listening to the Buddha's teaching? What was my view of the world? And now when another person is giving a kind of a deluded view, how can I really connect with it? How can I really have a relationship with it? And how can I still be at peace with it? And how can I maintain a kind of a non-conflict with that person? Kind of a cordial relationship with that person. Because if you know a better view, if you know a sort of higher view, then you can always understand the lower kind of a view, a kind of immature view. So that's why Buddha is giving a kind of a very interesting explanation about all these 24 concepts, covering the whole experience by a worldling, by an untaught person. So that is in a way very helpful. And we can understand the operation of our mind, how our mind giving many different ideas, many different perceptions, based on our own preconceived ideas, based on our likes and dislikes, our conditioning of the mind. And what was the difference between a typical person and a seeker, a trainee? And what's the difference between a seeker and an arahant? So likewise, a very beautifully giving that explanation in this sutta. So I therefore invite all of you to a little understand the sutta and try to reflect on it. And we'll slowly go to the depth on next week as well. So thank you very much for joining. And we'll conclude today's session by reciting the traditional verses. Ettavata ca amhehi sambatam punya sampadam sabbe deva anumodantu sabba sampatti siddhya. Ettavata ca amhehi sambatam punya sampadam sabbe bhuta anumodantu sabba sampatti siddhya. Ettavata ca amhehi sambatam punya sampadam sabbe satta anumodantu sabba sampatti siddhya. Akasattha ca bummattha deva naga mahiddika punyantam anumoditva chiram rakkhantu sasanam. Akasattha ca bummattha deva naga mahiddika punyantam anumoditva chiram rakkhantu desanam. Akasattha ca bummattha deva naga mahiddika punyantam anumoditva chiram rakkhantu mamparam. Idam vo nyatinam hotu sukita huntu nyatayo. Idam vo nyatinam hotu sukita huntu nyatayo. Idam vo nyatinam hotu sukita huntu nyatayo. Imina punya kammena mame bala samagamo. Satam samagamo hotu yava nibbana pattiya. Imina punya kammena mame bala samagamo. Satam samagamo hotu yava nibbana pattiya. Imina punya kammena mame bala samagamo. Satam samagamo hotu yava nibbana pattiya. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu.